south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, we're back. As this show goes out, we'll be right in the middle of my Expat Insider Seminar. Of course, that means we'll be on the road with boots on the ground exploring, too, so there will not be a new Expat Files show for Sunday, February 20th. But I hope to do the next one or two shows direct from Bitcoin Beach in El Salvador. So stay tuned for that. By the way, just a comment here regarding something I see all the time. Cheapskate gringos. Yeah, cheapskate gringos. They're everywhere. After all, it's the backpacker's calling card, right? But don't be confused. Just because a gringo doesn't tip a waiter or a waitress at a restaurant doesn't mean he's a cheapskate. It just might mean he's astute and knows a little Spanish and he looked at the bill and he saw there was a 10 or 15% tip or propina already added to it. You see that all over Latin America, especially at well-known eating establishments. So do look at the bottom of your bill. If it says propina and 10 or 12 or 15% added, well, you know, if you had really good service, you can give them more. It's up to you. But just be aware that probably in 70 or 80% of the cases, the tip's already added in. Except, and look out for this, when you're at one of those little mom-and-pop restaurants, where they handwrite the receipt instead of getting a printout. So when you're at a place like that and it's handwritten, the tip is not included. So tip them, please, 10 or 15% as usual. Tell you what I really hate, though, when you're on the tourist trail, Costa Rica, Cancun, the resort areas of Dominican Republic, many places in Panama, too. You go into a restaurant, you look at the menu, you get the bill, and they've slapped an 18% tourist tax on you, plus 10 or 15% tip. All of a sudden, that $10 meal is 13 or 14 bucks. I'll tell you, you don't have to be a cheapskate for that to irk you. Yep, you heard that right. When you're on the tourist trail in Latin America, you could and will most times be nailed for 30%+ more than the listed advertised prices. And you know, that irritates me so much. This might seem crappy to say, but I never, no matter how great the service, leave any extra tip. Because you know, for me, that any tip is included in the bill is sort of an irritant. I've always been taught that you should be the one who determines the amount of the tip. Or technically, then it ain't a tip, is it? Since a tip, by definition, is voluntary. Look it up. Oh, and here's a sticky situation. Did you ever have bad service and say to the waiter or cashier, you're not paying the tip that's already included on the bill? I've done it, but maybe just two or three times in my life. And believe me, it was a fight. But the fact that gringoized areas nail you with a tourist tax, 15, 18, even 25% in some cases. Think about how regressive that is. It's more than an insult. First of all, the tourist town is what brings in all the dough to these countries, right? Yet governments have the balls to punish you with a tourist tax, when the truth is most people spend like drunken sailors when they're on vacation. By the way, have you ever met a drunken sailor? I met one once and he wouldn't even buy me a drink. Could they be getting a bad rap? Maybe. Just saying. Anyway, those hefty tourist taxes in gringo-saturated areas, well, that's just another good reason I'll never have my plan B on the tourist trail. Oh, and just to revisit an earlier topic, I was talking about how there are plenty of fortune tellers and self-proclaimed clairvoyants. You'll find them in every Latin neighborhood, but you'll almost never find them on the tourist trail. If you want to find one yourself, you have to ask around in a scruffy neighborhood. Anyway, I was at a little barbecue party at a Latino's home the other day, in a sort of upscale neighborhood. Gated, guarded community and all that, and as I was taking a little walk through the house, checking the doors that were open, I like to look around, I'm kind of a snoop. You longtime listeners have heard me say that if I ever end up at your house someday, make sure you hide the stuff in your bathroom cabinet you don't want me to see, because I'm going to look. And you might just hear me talking about it on the show. Anyway, I was kind of snooping around, and I stuck my head into a room and saw one of those little prayer altars, you know, with the candles, statues, open Bible. Nothing unusual for the typical Latino house, except when I popped my head in the door off the laundry room. Turned out to be the cuarto de servicio, where the cleaning lady lives. And you know what? She had her own little altar in there with her own burning candles. Turns out there's kind of a caste system when it comes to prayer altars, too. Kind of sad, really. Turns out the Latina lady of the house wouldn't share her upscale altar with the lowly cleaning lady. Hey, what can I tell you but the classism that you see in Latin America is extreme. I said classism, not racism. Now, you've probably heard me say that most all homes in Latin America that aren't shacks, you know, that don't have tin roofs and such, have some kind of cuarto de servicio, maid's room. That's right, even an 800-square-foot cracker box. We'll have a maid's quarters. It seems just so weird to us gringos and expats who come from a society where a maid's quarters was only found in a very wealthy person's house. Certainly in the houses of people I never had a chance to step foot in. I mean, really, come on, how many people do you know that have live-in maids? In the old days, back in Chicago, I knew exactly zero families who did. And I knew a couple of very wealthy families who owned factories, multimillionaires that didn't have live-in maids. Sure, they had maids, but no one lived in. But here in Latin America, you see that all the time. Some people have two, a live-in nanny and a live-in maid. Even families considered poor by our standards, people who make $1,000 a month, let's say. Most all have a house with a maid's quarters, with live-in maids too, even on that salary, because a live-in maid here in Latin America are often paid between $150 and $200 a month because they're getting room and board too. I know, that sounds ridiculous and impossible, but you see it all the time. Now, as a gringo or an expat, of course, you could pay them a lot more than that. It's up to you. But tens of thousands of maids and cleaning ladies all over Latin America are only making $150 to $200 a week. Now, all the houses I've lived in have had maids' quarters too. Eventually, they always became storage or work rooms for me. A couple of times I've torn out the toilet and the shower stall to give myself a little extra shelf space. That's what most gringos and expats end up doing. We just can't get used to having a maid living in the house. And I've always had a maid. Well, maybe not the first 6 months I got down here, but for the rest of the time, yes, I've had a maid. And right now, my maid comes in 3 days a week. And when I hired her, I didn't set the price. I asked her what she wanted to get. I know the going rate, and of course, you ask them that question, they're going to highball it. And I can tell you, she was a little shocked when I said, okay, I'll pay that. I pay her about $230 a month, exactly what she asked for. And she works 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And she doesn't live in. In fact, I've only had that situation once. Long, long time ago, I had a live-in maid. For a couple of months, anyway. I know I told this story before, but it's worth repeating. She was a young, cute, humble, indigenous girl, maybe 19, who used to get 1 weekend off a month to go back to her pueblo, which is a couple hundred miles away. She worked about 3 or 4 months for me, and one day she called me up from her pueblo on her weekend off and told me, kind of tearfully, that she wasn't coming back anymore. Her reason? She just got married to the boy she left behind. Well, that was all right with me, because I just couldn't get used to having someone live in like that. It was an experiment for me, and I'm glad she ended it. But here's the thing, let me tell you about my cleaning lady, the one I have right now. I'd say she's about 35, a single mother, living alone. Kind of pudgy and really short, closing in on 4 foot something, but man, can she work. She said it takes an hour to an hour and a half to get to my place every morning and to get home at night. She has to do 3 bus transfers. She lives in a really kind of crappy barrio, but the rents are really cheap. She says she pays about $100 a month for her little apartment rent for her and her kid. Like I said, she works 3 days a week, comes at 7:30 and leaves at 6:30 at night. Not because I insisted those were her working hours. In all the time she's been working for me, a couple of years now, I never once mentioned any kind of strict working hours. Those are the hours that work for her, 7:30 to 6:30 at night. Oh, and did I tell you she goes shopping for me, cooks my breakfast and lunch? She'd do dinner for me too, but I eat a late lunch. She goes to the bank, pays the internet and utility bills, pops off to the hardware store if I need some nails or screws. Whatever errands are necessary, I just tell her and she's on it. Oh, by the way, many cleaning ladies and maids have their idiosyncrasies. Mine does. She works barefoot all the time. Plus, she likes to sing while she works. Not real loud, but she does sing. You know what that means, don't you? She likes her job. And unlike so many discordant Latinas that love to sing too, she actually sings in tune. How about that? Oh, and almost every time I ask her a question, or we talk a little bit about something, she almost always concludes with the phrase, gracias a Dios, or si Dios permite. For example, when she goes out the door on Monday, I'll say, goodbye, Ingrid, see you Wednesday. She won't say okay, she'll say, si Dios permite, if God permits. And sometimes I'll say in Spanish, because she knows zero English. I'll say, oh, I think he will. Pienso que sí. And she always laughs. And get this, she hasn't missed a day in 2 years. Except, of course, when I'm traveling. Been doing a lot of that lately. But I still pay her her regular salary if I'm not around and the house is locked up. I don't give anybody the key. You have to realize, girls like her live on the edge from day to day. So I still give her her regular amount. Why make life any harder for her? Oh, and by the way, at the end of the day, when she's walking out the door, she always opens up her purse and lets me inspect it. Now, I never asked her to do that, but that seems to be the general routine with all cleaning ladies. Some of them do have sticky fingers, you know, I've had a few of those. So it seems to be the general routine that all employers expect their cleaning ladies to open up that purse to be inspected when they're leaving for the day. Though to me that seems pretty weak, because if a cleaning lady, for example, wanted to steal some money, she's not going to put it in her purse. She's going to put it in her shoe or bra or pants. There are endless places to hide stuff on your person. I mean, really, if you want to be stealthy about stealing stuff, you're not going to put it in your purse. Nevertheless, we do go through that dumb routine every time she leaves. So what else about the cleaning lady? Oh, yeah. Of course, I include her lunch. She could have breakfast, too, but she only eats lunch. I always tell her she could eat anything that's in the house, and if she wants something special, she could just buy it when she goes to the store. I'll pay. But believe me, there's nothing extravagant about a cleaning lady's eating habits. They're rice, beans, and chicken people all the way. Of course, I give her little extra things here and there. She scavenges stuff that I throw out. Like, for example, I threw out a paint can the other day that had maybe 3 inches of paint in it and was all kind of lumpy and curdly. You know how old paint gets. And when I put it by the door for her to take out to the garbage, she said, "Can I have that?" I said, "Sure, take it." And I've given her extra food to take home to the kid. And when Christmas and birthdays come around, I give her a present and her kid, too. I buy a nice toy for the kid because I know she can't afford it. Now, of course, she's not the perfect cleaning lady. I had to really train her up, especially the hygiene part of cooking. And sometimes she goes crazy with the chlorine bleach when she's doing the laundry. In fact, she's stained more than a few of my bath towels. And I told her, if she wrecks another one of my good towels, I'm going to dock her pay. Though that just was more or less an idle threat. I wouldn't do that. But I can't have her wrecking expensive towels either. Oh, and by the way, she works the other 2 days a week at a Latino family. I don't know them, and I have no idea what kind of neighborhood they live in either. However, it's a family, she says, with a medium-sized dog that's kind of crazy, and it doesn't listen and has no training, poops and pees all over the place and gets into everything. She says the owners feel training up the dog is not part of the equation since they have a cleaning lady. Anyway, I bet she doesn't work barefoot in that house, nor does she sing much. Anyway, I've had lots of experience with cleaning ladies, and they always tell me they'd rather work for gringos and expats than anyone. In fact, we're known for spoiling them, too. Whereas most Latino families are known for treating their cleaning ladies like second-class citizens. They yell at them and order them around like slaves. Not all Latino employers, of course. But I've seen enough of it to know it's fairly common. Yep, I've seen it, and it's embarrassing. A couple of times at Latino parties, I've seen the Latina matriarch, the mama, the head of the house, insult the cleaning lady in front of people. To me, that's a big no-no. There's nothing worse than that. In fact, up in the States, they always teach in those business management courses, if you're going to discipline an employee, always do it in private, never in front of anyone else. And when you're done with that conversation, which could be harsh, you should always end on a positive note, maybe compliment something they're doing right, so they don't walk out of there all pissed off. If they're generally good employees, you don't want them to be pissed off or totally deflated. Because, you know, one harsh word from an employer can cut pretty deep. And it's twice as bad if it's done in front of spectators. But you knew that already, right? Or did you? Yeah, you did. But apparently, most Latina boss ladies don't. Oh, and note I said Latina boss ladies, because when I've seen cleaning ladies castigated, and I've seen that at least a dozen times, every time it was done by the boss lady, the lady of the house, not her husband, even though he pays her salary. Because that's the well-established hierarchy in a Latin household. The mother of the house in charge of the cleaning lady, the guy in the house, dad, in charge of the gardener or maintenance guy. In other words, mother's in charge of the inside of the house and the cleaning lady, and father, the man of the house, is in charge of the outside, the maintenance guy in the gardener's domain. All right, there you have it. Some tips and advice. How gringos and expats and local Latinos deal with their own cleaning ladies. It's a little insight as to why most cleaning ladies, maintenance guys, and gardeners prefer to work for gringos and expats. All right, now an email from Marco C. He says, "Johnny, I was fortunate to migrate to America in 1969 from Brazil. At the time, I was in training as an economist, a career that was somewhat delayed because my English was terrible when I arrived in the States. By the way," he says, "don't ever let anyone tell you economics is a real science. It's a black art at best that directs policies and politics depending on which party is in office. A real science is like, for example, mathematics, where 2 plus 2 always equals 4. no matter how many idiot wokesters say it's a white supremacist concept. Anyhow, math is a real science, whereas economists have no such universally agreed upon truisms. You can get economists from different political parties to disagree on almost everything. It's really a joke. Consider, for example, he says, the Federal Reserve in the United States has 200 plus economists on the payroll. So by that measure, it only takes 200 economists to drive the world's biggest economy into the toilet. By all measures, it's mission accomplished. But what I really wanted to write about and tell you are my sad observations about what I've seen going down in America since I landed in 69. It took 50 years of terrible political management to turn the world's greatest economy into the Titanic. And like any massive ship, even if you pull hard on the rudder, it takes a huge amount of time to notice even the smallest change in the course. He says, I see real evil in U.S. politics disguised as benevolence. I've seen the same evil socialist communist fools in my country. They promise people they'll tax the rich. It works every time. Regular working class people love that refrain, tax the rich. So they vote for that. And little by little, the socialists take over the government. There is a saying in Latin America, to get a socialist government, you have to vote them in. But to get them out, it takes a violent uprising because they don't go softly. So that's just what the politicians promise. Tax the rich, increase the debt, and to do that, they have to roll the money printing presses. But the fools in government can't keep that game rolling. They always run out of other people's money. And if they really succeed in taxing the rich move their corporations offshore. And what we see in the U.S. right now is implosion due to money printing, which always devalues the money through inflation. Meanwhile, university economic departments are churning out new wave economists who believe in a new paradigm called MMT, Modern Monetary Theory, which sanctions unlimited government spending, helicopter money, endless money printing, and the unimportance of massive government debt. Well, it's deja vu all over again and again and again. Like Cuba, Venezuela, Argentina, and my country, Brazil. In fact, I remember my dad, back in the 60s, hurrying from getting his paycheck to convert the soon-to-be devalued Brazilian reals into something else, like dollars, gold, whatever. And once a country's money supply is thoroughly debased and their treasury filled with worthless bonds and IOUs, they all end up like Venezuela. But before they completely go off the rails, it gets worse. They go to war. It's a last-ditch effort to get people who are pissed off at their failed government redirected and pissed off at the country they're going to war with, usually a neighbor. Stirring up nationalism and patriotism by going to war is a common last move of failed governments. Then he says, and what always amazes me, and I've been studying this a long time, is the combination of extreme ignorance and arrogance in those evil government fools and corporate fascist control freaks. Somehow they always believe, or at least extol, that they can make a never-before-successful system like socialism work this time. Even after 50-plus failed Marxist and socialist experiments worldwide, with untold suffering and countless millions dead, they always say they'll get it right this time. They've worked out the kinks this time. Doesn't it seem odd that no lifer politician who pushes those ideas has ever lived in a socialist country like I did in Brazil? But not to worry, they'll get it right because it's different this time. And he signs it Marco C., New York, New York. P.S. As I am retired now, I've been popping back and forth to Latin America, Brazil included, naturally, since both I and my wife have relatives there. However, I'm looking at Guatemala, El Salvador, and possibly Panama as my plan B exit strategy. And people, my friends and such, say, why not Brazil? After all, we both know Portuguese and have relatives and family there. I tell them, no way, it's a basket case. And when they press me for details, I say, are you sure you want to hear about it? Because it makes me sad to talk about it. All right, thanks for that, Marco. I guess I've got nothing to add. That's a first, huh? Okay, moving on. A couple of shows ago, we talked about lard-ass traffic cops, the trials and tribulations of driving in Latin America, the constant battles you'll have with all the idiot drivers, the roadblocks, police stops, your gringo advantage when you get pulled over, etc., etc. Well, today, let's talk a little bit about radar guns and speed traps. Some big Latin American cities have speed traps. Funny thing, though, they seem to show up in upscale neighborhoods. I wonder why. Probably because people with nice cars tend to pay their fines, while locals driving junkers are so used to violating traffic rules on a daily basis, they rarely pay their fines. They just let them stack up. So anyway, more and more towns and cities in Latin America are installing photo radars. We all know and hate those things. Did you ever get a photo radar surprise in your mailbox? Or maybe they're sending those things by email these days. They're starting to install those things down here in Latin America too, but for now anyway, only in upscale neighborhoods and gringoized tourist areas. I wonder why, isn't that funny? Especially since in the scruffier, crappier neighborhoods, drivers practically think it's a human right to violate traffic laws, and they do it with impunity. But first, something you have to know that's very different from up in the States. Down here, in most Latin American countries anyway, when you buy and register a car in a local municipality, and you get a ticket, it's assessed not against you, but your car. That means if someone else besides the owner is driving the car and they get a ticket, doesn't matter, it's assessed against the car. And if the fine's not paid, the fees add up. And when you go to renew the sticker on your car, that comes up once a year. It's called the car's circulation, circulación. If there's been a traffic violation or two, they won't issue that new sticker until you pay the fines. But here's the thing. Those few countries like Costa Rica, parts of Mexico, Panama, etc., who've installed those photo radars have found out it's a cash cow. So you can expect more and more of those things to be popping up, especially again on the Gringo Tourist Trail and in upscale neighborhoods all over Latin America. But believe me, there's huge lag time on that. And remember, there's a terrible Latin American maintenance issue. So if you spot one of those photo radars at an intersection, unless it's brand new or had been recently installed, chances are it's on the blink or will be soon. We all want the locals to have better driving habits, after all, and if it takes a bunch of fines to do it, well, the problem is they're not targeting the really bad and dangerous drivers, only the moderately bad ones. So then why am I bringing this up right now? Because I wanted to read you snippets from this article, published just this week in Cuenca, Ecuador's biggest newspaper. As you probably know by now, gringos and expats have been piling into Cuenca, Ecuador, ever since International Living started pushing Ecuador as a great expat destination. And wouldn't you know it, as the gringos started piling in a few years back, suddenly came those photo radars. Coincidence? I don't think so. And the government likes that cash cow so much, they're installing more. Listen to this, and I'll read some snippets and paraphrase here. It says, the city of Cuenca is planning on installing 32 photo radars at 16 urban and rural intersections, ostensibly, I like that word, to reduce accidents. Yeah, right. Then it says the devices take photos of license plates of vehicles that are speeding or making improper turns, drivers who run stoplights or stop on top of zebra crosswalks. How about that? All right, now my two centavos. This is not the first time photo radars have been installed in Cuenca, Ecuador. Turns out over the last couple of years, they've had a few installed and are addicted to the money they bring in. That's why they've ordered 32 more of them. Even though it says it's going to cost them $7,292,000 for that new group of 32. I know it sounds like an unbelievable price to pay, and maybe they'll never be able to pay it back. Well, that's what I was thinking at first, but I was wrong. Turns out, and this is pretty shocking, they've got seven other previously installed photo radars in the city, and just for the 6 months from January to June 2021, they collected $3 million in fines. $3 million. And that's with just seven of these setups. And now they're ordering more than four times as many. It's obvious it's not about making better drivers out of the population. It's about collecting dough. Because they're not installing these things in the neighborhoods where they've got the really crappy, even dangerous drivers and all those junk cars. Instead, they're installing them in upscale areas where people have decent cars and who will pay those fines. Oh, and then the article says, be careful about who you lend your car to since each violation carries a $127 fine. You know, that's really funny because some of the really terrible cars and taxis in the really junk neighborhoods are worth less than that. $127. Now, that seems par for the course for a fine up in the States, maybe, but for Latin America, that's steep. But just like in places like Cancun and Costa Rica, when the gringos pile in, the price of everything goes up. In fact, I don't think there's a single transit fine in Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, or El Salvador that's over $40. Yet in Ecuador, they're four times as much. Of course, you longtime listeners know, and visitors to Costa Rica, that they really gouge you there with traffic fines. In fact, one of my friends got a speeding ticket there, cost him $550. Gringo prices all the way. Now, he lives there, so he knew he'd have to pay it eventually, or he wouldn't be able to renew his circulation sticker on his car. Well, as it turned out, a couple weeks later, he had to fly to the States for some reason, and when he got to the airport, he found his passport was blocked. he had to pony up $550 for that fine or miss his flight. He found out the hard way. All the transit computers are now connected to Juan Santa Marina International Airport in Costa Rica. Yep, that happened because too many gringo tourists rented a car, got a transit fine, didn't pay up, and left the country. Yet another negative secondary effect of way too many annoying gringos. Oh, and one last thing about these photo radars they're installing in Ecuador. Now, they're not installed yet, but they're having a big debate in the city council. And that debate is over placement of those new radar systems throughout the city. Where will they go? Where should they put them? Because, you see, a couple of city councilmen are pissed. They don't want them in their neighborhoods because they see it as the government putting its hands in the pockets of the local citizens. So how do you think that's going to turn out? You have to believe in the end, most of those things will end up in gringo neighborhoods. Why? Because Cuenca, Ecuador citizens can vote and gringos can't. Oh, and speaking of Ecuador, you know, I've been reading a lot of cases lately where they've captured and extradited gringos who've committed crimes both in the States and internationally. Hey, I'm all for picking up and extraditing pedophiles and such. I say lock them up, put them in the prison general population, and have that word pedophile stenciled in large letters on that orange jumpsuit. See how long they last. Same thing with rapists. But it seems to me, by all the stats, Ecuador extradites more gringos back to the States than any other Latin country. Like, for example, this week's gringo extradition poster child is a guy named Ronald G., 62 years old, a legal resident in Ecuador, too. How'd that happen? Who's been charged with swindling the bank accounts and credit cards of more than 1,700 victims. Turns out he used some of that dough to buy a couple of bars and restaurants in Ecuador. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to get extradited. He probably does. My question is, if he's been such a big-time swindler, how'd he end up in Ecuador in the first place and for so long to buy businesses and get his legal residency? The bigger question is, how come so many bad boy gringos have ended up in Ecuador? So many that it seems every week some high-profile gringos being extradited and you read about it in the papers. Imagine all the lesser cases you don't even read about. You know, the further you dig into things like this, the more questions pop up. Why so many gringo swindlers in Ecuador? What drew them there? Why Ecuador? Are they all international living subscribers, maybe? And why does the Ecuador government bow so easily to U.S. extradition requests? We'll have to dig a little deeper into that.
South of the border, you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.